Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. Thank you for joining us today, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. If you want to get in touch with us that way right here on Giants.com. A lot to talk about today as we get ready for the New Orleans Saints in Week 2. We'll do a little bit of a look back on Week 1 against Dallas. I'll give you my take on what I thought some of the most important takeaways from the game was. And then let's start with this though, Lance. The NFL announcing, I believe, three different teams' color rush jerseys. Maybe it was four. Came out today on the website. All of them came out on the website. Right, I don't think so, the four of them. And the Giants were one of them. Basically, the uniforms in the past have been all one color, so blue on blue, white on white, red on red, whatever. The Giants, though, almost doing a combination retro color rush type of deal where it kind of has the feel of the jerseys from the 80s, the helmet, but it's white jersey, white pants.
Yeah, and then you have the blue numbering and the red outline as well. Yeah. So you're right, it does have that retro type of feel. It resembles somewhat of the Buffalo Bills colors as well, because obviously the Giants and the Bills both have similarities on that front. But this is something that's going to go league-wide now, John. What you alluded to was last year on the Thursday night games, I remember the ketchup mustard game, if you recall, where it was the Rams and the Niners. One team was in red, the other team was in yellow, and so forth. Well, now they're spreading it across the NFL landscape, so you're going to have teams that have picked specific dates and games and opponents where they're going to have these jerseys on display, as opposed to it just being a select few teams on Thursday night games.
And this for the Giants will be the
against the Philadelphia
the
Eagles
right before
yes.
Christmas, right?
Yeah.
So that's when the Giants going to wear the jerseys. Go to Giants.com. Check it out. I believe it's on the Giants lifestyle page, if I'm not mistaken, but you can link to that through the main website on Giants.com, and you can certainly check that out.
It's up on the main page as well.
It's kind of big, so you can check it out. They did an interview with Joe Skiba. That's up there, so you can check that out as well as they break down how the whole design came about for those Color Rush jerseys. So give us a call. Talk about that. Now, real quickly, Lance, you talked about it in full length and detail yesterday, but pardon me, I want to get a little bit into what happened on Sunday, and I'm not going to go through every aspect of the game as I'll be here for 30 minutes, but here are the key things that I took out of it. One, encouraged by the play of the offensive line in the running game, especially in the fourth quarter, but taking into consideration the opponent. The Cowboys' defensive line in front, not exactly
world
beaters.
Missing a number of key components.
So, one. Two, you would have liked to see a little bit more pass rush, but much like on the other side of the field, keep in mind who they were playing. They're playing against what's probably the best offensive line in football. So maybe you didn't see the sacks. You didn't see enough hurries or quarterback hits. Well, look at the opponent. Remember, too, the Giants also forced a couple holding penalties in the Cowboys' offensive line, too. So that's something good to take advantage of. So I think those are two good ones. The big one that I take out of this is that you won the type of game that this team consistently lost last year. And in the same category, Lance, you've lost this season opener so many years in a row. You want to get off on a good note here and not have that, you know, Groundhog's Day type of feeling where, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
And I think, and again, it was in part because of a Cowboy mistake. Williams did not get out of bounds when he could have, but mistakes happen all throughout the games by both teams. It doesn't come down just to one play. So you're happy that you closed out a game and a type of game you were not closing out last year.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think from a mental standpoint, it was important to put the issues from previous teams behind them and that this is a fresh slate. Plus, let's not forget it's a divisional game, too, off the top of the season. So not only do you build momentum that you finally win a season opener, but you also have a leg up on one of your division rivals. And it's very early. Redskins lose to the Steelers last night, so the Giants and the Eagles tied for first. You want that position where you're setting the tone early in the season, John, as opposed to what we've seen in previous seasons where, you know, the Giants are in that position where they got to play catch-up, and you don't want to be in that position. So this is somewhat of a fresh slate. The one thing that I will add as another positive is, I think, from a defensive standpoint, the ability to stop the run against arguably what could be one of the best rushing attacks in the NFL, at least as a result of what their offensive line presents.
Right, and if fans want to go out, check out our new feature, Cover 3 on Giants.com. That was my number one takeaway from the game, that the Giants' run defense was fantastic. Looking at a couple of the Cowboys reporters who looked at their game film after the game, and they were basically saying Ezekiel Elliott had nowhere to go. Not that he didn't play well, it's just that he had nowhere to run. Why? Because the Giants, defensive line, played so well. And a lot of people talked about Olivier Vernon coming here as a pass rusher, and doing those sorts of things. But his ability to set the edge in that game, we saw him blow up Jason Witten a couple different times trying to set the edge. And Olivier Vernon, I thought, had a huge impact on the run game.
Well, it is one of the things that we did focus on, just like we've talked about JPP in the past. You don't just want guys off the edge, John, that get to the quarterback, because there's also going to be runners towards the edge, and they need to have the ability to stop the run. And I think Vernon did a really nice job, and I think we also saw the impact of when you put Snacks next to Jonathan Hankins and you put those two big bodies in the middle, it's also very difficult for the opposition to run up the gut. And I think if you're the Giants, you want them to try to run to the edge, and as long as JPP and Vernon continue to play like this and they get support from the linebackers, which is probably the one area where you want to see some improvement moving forward, the middle of the field as well as off the edge. But overall, I think it was obviously a good overall start to the Giants' defensive attitude and their philosophy, considering what we saw at times last season.
And then real quickly on the offensive side of the ball, I thought they get into a little bit of a rut in the middle of the game after the Eli Manning interception. Quite frankly, the Giants were extremely fortunate not to have something disastrous happen when Manning threw that backwards pass to Rashad Jennings that he was able to pick up and run. If Jennings doesn't get his hand on that, it bounces. It's probably returned for a touchdown by Dallas. So there was some fortunate stuff there. But overall, Eli Manning's numbers, how can you complain? 67% completion, 207 yards, but that yardage number has a lot to do with the fact that he didn't have that many attempts. The Giants just ran 56 offensive plays because of the time of possession. Three touchdowns, one interception, and a very balanced passing attack. You had seven different guys catch passes, four different guys with 20 or more receiving yards, five different guys with three or more
catches.
Touchdowns were spread around to three different players, and Beckham wasn't even one of them. So I think you saw the Cowboys pay a lot of attention to Odell Beckham Jr. Other guys were able to make the Cowboys pay for that.
Which is the goal, because you assume Beckham's going to get a lot of attention. Other guys need to step up. And we saw that at times last season. You just wanted more continuity and consistency. And, you know, with what Shepard did, with what Victor Cruz did, with what Larry Donnell did. And let's not forget, I thought Shane Vereen's play was quite impressive, too, in terms of his running ability up the middle, as well as his service as a receiver. And, you know, you threw out the numbers, John. One other number I'll throw out, 28 pass attempts versus 24 rushes. The balance on offense, not so much the receiving balance, but the overall balance, I think was a huge takeaway. That was not something that we saw continually throughout last season.
And the four-minute offense at the end, obviously a big
milk
part
and
of
clock.
That.
Yeah.
Folks, thanks for joining us on Twitter. If you want to check out the rest of the show, go to Giants.com and watch Big Blue Kickoff. We'll start taking your calls in just a second. A couple things we talked about, the good. A couple things I think the Giants will want to get better at off this game. Cowboys marched up and down the field way too easily the first half. I think the Giants' defensive strategy was sound. You put eight men in the box, you stop the run. You don't let them beat you deep. You make them dink and dunk. And I think the defense got better in the second half once they made some adjustments and they figured out what the Cowboys were going to do. We talked about it. There was a lot of unknown in this game. So I think it took the Giants a little bit to figure out exactly what the Cowboys' game plan was and how to defend it. And I think it got better in the second half. But you'd have liked to see them get off the field a little bit better. And for first half specifically, I don't think the Cowboys punted the ball until late second quarter.
No, well, they had those two drives where they got into the red zone, and then the other drive where they were a little bit out of the red zone. The penalty brought the field goal to 56 yards, and Dan Bailey nailed it. You know, third down is the one number that jumps out, because at one point, Dallas was 7 of 11 on third downs. But here's the big disparity between the first half and the second half, John, and the adjustment was the defense put Dak Prescott in third and longs in the second half. They did not do that in the first half. And when you're going up against an opponent that's facing third and two, I'm not saying that you shouldn't still be able to get them off the field, but it's a little bit easier because they either run or throw the ball short yardage to continue the drive, as opposed to when Prescott's facing third and 12, he doesn't have nearly as many options.
And part of that, the Giants' pass rush forced some Cowboys penalties, which pushed them into second and third and long. They continued to stop the run, and Prescott didn't play as well in the second half either. He airmailed some passes and things of that nature. So those are a couple things. You mentioned another thing that was good, the red zone defense. And if you really wanted to, me, go back to something that happened early but really was the reason the Giants won the game, keeping the Cowboys out of the end zone on those two red zone possessions in the first quarter, then the next one in the second quarter, huge plays. Now, they caught a break. Cole Beasley dropped a little pass over the middle. If he catches that, he might be able to run in. But again, that happens in every type of game. I don't put a huge red mark next to that. They kept them out of the end zone. That's what counts. Hold teams to field goals. Instead of the Cowboys up 17-7, they're up 13-7, and that was a huge difference.
Yeah, three possessions for the Cowboys that we talked about in the first half all led to points.
Yeah.
But the problem is, for them, it was only 9. And if they would have gotten a touchdown, if the Giants' defense didn't come through, maybe we're not talking about Terrence Williams and his decision to run in out of bounds or stay in bounds. I mean, that's the difference right there. You capitalize early, and then all of a sudden you have more wiggle room late.
You're right. I'm sorry. 17 points instead of 9 points, not 17 points instead of 13 points. Absolutely right. So, to me, those are the big takeaways from the game. I don't think there's a whole lot else to touch on, but we can certainly take your calls. Anything you want to talk about? You mentioned the Saints. They're coming up next week, Lance. Typical Saints. They were in a shootout with the Oakland Raiders on their home field last week. They had a lead. The Raiders came back. Jack Del Rio had a very gutsy move going for a two-point conversion. Got it. Saints miss a 63-yard field or 61?
I think it was 61.
61.
Yeah.
And they can't win the game at the very end. But the Saints can still score the ball. They can still move the ball. Drew Brees is very good. You might not know the names, but their wide receiver core is very impressive. Brandon Cooks is becoming a star. Willie Snead is in his second year. He's playing really well. 9 catches on 9 targets. I think 162
very
yards
efficient
in the game on Sunday. And Michael Thomas had 6 catches on 6 targets, the rookie out of Ohio State, for I think 64 yards or so, 68 yards maybe, in that game. So a very balanced attack. Mark Ingram could run the ball a little bit. So a very impressive offense for the Saints. And this Giants defense, after dealing with a rookie quarterback in week one, now it's going to have a whole different animal in week number two.
Yeah, Drew Brees has seen just about everything in the National Football
League.
You're
not fooling
him. No, you're not necessarily going to, you know, catch him off guard. I'll add also Kobe Fleener, the tight end they added from Indianapolis.
He was quiet last week.
He was quiet, but still a receiving threat. Drew Brees loves to spread the wealth. I don't think that's necessarily anything new. And you mentioned the running backs, and it's not just Mark Ingram. You know, Kadett, who caught a touchdown, they'll mix and match their personnel. C.J. Spiller was a healthy scratch. Who knows? He may be active this week. They're going to mix and match depending on the opposition, so that's something also to watch out for. And you know, there isn't that big of a difference. I mean, clearly the Cowboys have a reputation of having one of the best offensive lines, but if you look at the Saints numbers last year, John, they only gave up 31 sacks, which was in the top 10 in
remember,
terms
a lot
of fewer
that
sacks.
Is quarterback related
of course it's
Brees
related but remember
ball.
I mean, they only gave up one sack to Drew Brees, and that was really a coverage sack,
right?
So they have a bunch of veterans on that line who do a very good job protection wise I mean, I don't think this is necessarily a gift wrapped opportunity compared to what Dallas presents.
No, certainly not. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I don't want to spend too much time on the Saints. It's just Tuesday. They struggle. I mean, they don't have a lot of players. They won really good pass rusher in Cameron Jordan.
They added Nick Fairley in the middle.
Right. Good run stopper, and he gets a little bit of pressure from the inside. They did lose their best corner, Delvin Bro.
Broke his leg.
To a broken leg. So now they're going to play a bunch of guys that really have very little NFL experience. So that could be something the Giants can take advantage of. So, I think this is going to be a shootout. A lot of people make a big deal. Oh, but the Giants are home. Drew Brees can't play on the road. Guys, it's going to be like 65 or 70 degrees and beautiful on Sunday. That weather's not going to affect Drew Brees and that Saints passing attack. This isn't a windy stadium like the old Meadowlands was, the old Giants stadium. So, I think there's going to be a lot of points. I think it's going to be a fun game, and it's going to be a tough game. And a very different type of game than the one I think we saw against Dallas.
Well, because here's the thing. If the Saints get in the red zone 3 times in the first half, I would say because of their veteran quarterback.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's more than likely, though, that you know they have a few tricks up their sleeve that perhaps they could punch it in more so than a rookie.
Remember, I'm going to put this on its head a little bit here. Last year, what was one of the reasons we said the Giants struggled in the red zone so much?
Well, I'd say there were a variety of reasons that you could point to.
They couldn't run the ball is a big one.
Well, that was on the offensive side of things you're talking about.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Well, let's flip that around. If you're a defense and you stop the run particularly well now, and other teams are going to have trouble running the ball into the end zone, they're going to have to throw it, that makes things a lot more difficult for other teams to score. So you look at something the Giants struggled at offensively last year. If they're good at that defensively, that should improve their red zone defense an awful lot.
No, and I agree with you there. The only thing I'll say is that the Saints, and this gets back to my point, they use their running backs as receivers.
Yeah.
So they're not even sometimes looking to run the ball when they get in the red zone because they like to spread it out that much. And the other thing is, you know, the Saints also look for the big plays. And that's what I think is going to be key for the Giants. Brandon Cook scored from 98 yards out. It's the longest touchdown in franchise history. And Drew Brees has been there for quite some time. So they look for the home run, which means being well disciplined disciplined, even when you're way out of the red zone, is going to be important, because a short slant for the Saints can turn into a 70-yard gain. And I think they have a lot more playmakers who can get out into open space, perhaps much more so than what the Cowboys present.
Yeah, I didn't see the play. Was it a long catch and run, or was it just a deep pass down the sideline?
It was a deep pass down the sideline, but he hit him in stride, John. I mean, you couldn't have
perfect
put it
throw.
In a, it was perfect on target, right to Cook's hands, and then he put it up a notch, and there was no catch.
Speaking of perfect throws, by the way, even though Eli kind of hit that little part in the middle of the game where I didn't think he was super sharp, he threw some great passes.
Yeah.
That throw to Odell Beckham Jr.
Right on the money.
You know, he wasn't wide open. He had a step on Scandrick, but it's not like he was, you know, in the clear and running free. A couple of the passes to Shepard were in coverage. Eli Manning made some really nice throws in that game to help get the Giants up and down the field.
Well, I was talking to Carl yesterday, John, and we were looking at the numbers. The numbers don't jump off the page. He only threw for 207, but
right.
It was an efficient 207. Mm-hmm. He capitalized and made the most out of those 207 yards. And you're right, he put the ball in positions where either his receiver was going to get it or nobody was going to get it, with the exception of the Shepard interception, obviously. But there was a miscue on that play.
And I thought the touchdown pass to Shepard was maybe a little bit underthrown.
But Shepard made the extra effort play.
Correct.
Yeah.
But the throw to Larry Donnell was perfect. Right over the linebacker's head. Only Donnell could get
correct.
To the ball.
Nobody
else. So I thought he made some really, really nice throws. And by the way, you mentioned they used their running backs as receivers. Tavares Cadet is a guy
correct.
Who could do some damage. You mentioned we'll see if C.J. Spiller is active week number two. Boy, that signing doesn't look like it's very good right now, does it?
Well, I was listening to what Sean Payton had to say. They have six running backs on the roster. So they're
when
picking
you go
and choosing.
Out and you give a contract to a guy like C.J. Spiller, you'd like him to be
you would.
Wearing a jersey on game day. That's
absolutely.
I'm
no, I'm not going to disagree, but it also helps when you have depth. You can pick and choose who you want based on the game plan. And it helps if Spiller's not on film, maybe it catches a team off guard 1 week because they don't know how they're going to utilize one guy from 1 week to another.
Well, you know what they say in baseball, when you're using two or three closers, what does that mean?
It means
you don't have a real closer.
You have a committee. That's exactly what you have, too.
Exactly, because you might have three closers, but that means you really don't have one closer. Because
fair enough. Well, but Mark Ingram's their workhorse. I think it's just a matter of the
absolutely.
Committee comes behind Mark
My point
Ingram.
Is that C.J. Yeah. Spiller has not been good enough to solidify himself into that secondary.
Well, and he also has had some durability issues, too, dating back to Buffalo.
That is true.
Staying healthy.
201-939-4513. We can discuss the games last night as well. Did you stay up for the Rams 49ers?
I did, unfortunately. I didn't get to see the fourth quarter. That's
okay.
when I
the
fell
first
asleep.
First half. I watched the first half, and then I was finished.
Yeah. Rams have some serious issues with their offensive line.
And, dude, by the way, their receivers stink.
Well, when your quarterback doesn't have any time to throw the football,
yeah,
it's
but
hard
if you,
for those
if you
guys to get out of
the
open space.
Though, too. They had tons of drops in the preseason, the Rams receivers. They don't give their quarterback a lot of help. Let me put it that way. Whether it's the offensive line
yeah.
or his targets, other than Todd Gurley, they've invested so many of their resources into that defense. And, look, they got a great defensive front. But, boy, their offense. Whew.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're two main targets. If you look, you're talking about Tavon Austin, who just got an extension. Young guy who hasn't necessarily proven that he can run the entire route tree and be that proven commodity. And then
correct.
Kenny Britt, who's had some off-the-field issues and, you know, has also been up and down throughout his productive career. You take that into consideration, yeah, he's not necessarily working with him much, and then the tight end position, too, is not a position of strength. So they're hoping Todd Gurley, they can get out in open space and create something out of nothing more often than not.
It's asking a lot.
It is asking a lot. It's a great deal. Plus, you know, when the pass protection's a problem, and the Niners were blitzing all throughout the game. I mean, there were times where Case Keenum, by the time he snapped the ball, no, there was no way he was going to have an opportunity to look down the field.
And the problem you got to have then, too, one of your receivers has got to be able to beat the team deep.
Of course.
To make him pay for that. And obviously, last night at least, the Rams were not able to do it. All right, your calls, 201-939-4513, and a good win for the Giants and the Steelers last night, beating the Redskins. Now the Giants are tied with the Philadelphia Eagles at 1-0. First place, NFC East, and the Redskins and Cowboys tied for last at 0-1 in the NFC
early
East. But only the Giants and Cowboys have played division games, so those obviously mean a little bit more. And like we've talked about many times before, if you want to win the division, you got to go 4-2 in the division. 3-3, maybe you get lucky. Probably not. You got to go 4-2. Giants off to a good start. Jerome in Charlotte, he will lead us off right here on Giants.com. Jerome, how are you, buddy?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing? I've been noticing with Eli, normally it's a 2-minute drill. I guess they call it the 4-minute drill now.
4-minute offense, it's called.
He's more effective, and the offense is more effective when he's running that. Do you think they'll start doing that more early?
I don't understand
procedure
what you
of it
Jerome, I don't understand what you mean. They ran the ball 9 straight times. What does that have to do with Eli Manning?
No, but what I'm saying, when they go and they hurry up offense.
That wasn't a
hurry
up offense, though.
Switching.
Well, but Jerome, they were looking to milk the clock at that point. That wasn't a hurry up offense.
No, but what I'm saying, that you can still hurry up to the line and make the defense not able to change and still run the clock.
No, but Jerome, I think my question is, so do you want them then to not come out of the huddle quickly? What are you suggesting the Giants change? I'm confused.
No, what I'm saying, when they hurry up to the line where the defense can't change players in and out.
Okay.
And Eli, can tire the players out on the field quicker where they're not as effective, then keep going in the huddle where they can switch out players.
But you started the call by saying that they were more effective in the 4-minute offense when they weren't doing that.
Yeah, when they go in the huddle, it seemed like they're not as effective.
Well, no, but Jerome.
Turn it up to the line and use the clock that way and keep the same defense on the field.
Well, Jerome, I understand where you're coming from. You're talking about keeping it quick, spontaneous, so that the Cowboys, for example, don't have an opportunity to shuffle defensive personnel. I understand that, but the example that you're using, if you go back to the 4-minute offense late in the game, the Giants were not moving at that pace because they wanted to milk the clock. They wanted to establish the run game. So you're pointing to an example where the offense was productive, but they weren't necessarily speeding things up at that point. That's what we're trying to bring to the table, where it was effective, where they were actually just running their normal offense.
Hello?
All right, looks like we may have lost.
Thank you, Jerome.
You're not. I'm still here, guys. One more question.
Yeah.
They didn't use the NASCAR package on defense last week. Really, I think maybe one or two plays. If so, do you think they use it more against Breeze to try to rush him into throwing?
Well, I mean, I think that's really a situational thing, Jerome, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. I think they will use it against the Saints more simply because I think the Saints are more likely to be in third and long. I mean, Lance, you mentioned it earlier. The Cowboys simply were not in third and long a whole lot in this game because they run the ball so much on first and second down. Now, it happened here or there, and that's when the Giants – I remember one play where they had JPP and OV on the same side, and they ran the stunt, and both guys got to the quarterback. That worked. But you're not going to get into those packages unless – you're in 3rd and 8, you're in 3rd and 9, you're in 3rd and 10. And the Cowboys weren't in those a whole lot because of the way they ran their offense because they knew they had a rookie quarterback.
Plus, if Damon Snacks Harrison is helping you stop the run, why am I taking him off the field just so I could put the NASCAR package out there?
Well, and that's why you want to wait till you know the team's
going
to pass
the situation. No,
right.
I agree with you. If they're
absolutely
facing 3rd and 10, yes, then Spags can go, all right, guys, let's get some more pass rushers out there. If it's still 3rd and 5, I'm keeping Snacks there because I want that pressure up the gut and I want him to be able to establish to stop the run.
And how good was Snacks in that game, by the way?
Solid. That's why they went out and signed him.
If you go to the website, I did like the little anatomy of the play, the written version, and I looked at it was a play where the Cowboys had it in the red zone the second time in the second quarter, and it was 1st and 10, I think, at the 15-yard line. And the Cowboys ran one of those zone stretch plays to the left, and Olivier Vernon blew up Jason Witten. Snacks Harrison gets him his nose tackle spot all the way outside the numbers, dislodges himself from Lael Collins, and tackles Ezekiel Elliott near the sideline. That's the type of impact that those two guys had on that game.
Yeah.
Played ridiculously well against the run.
Well, and what you were just pointing out was, this is something that gets overlooked. It's not so much Snacks' ability to stop the run, meaning him to get in a position to tackle. It's him pushing the line forward so that it opens up opportunities from the edges.
And occupying blockers. I mean, to move that 350-pound behemoth, and that's meant as a compliment, Snacks. It's not negative.
He's a presence.
I don't know. Yes. He is a presence, and usually you have to assign two guys to that presence to keep him off of your running back. 201-939-4513. Of course, it helped the Giants, too, that they're able to put 8 men in the box pretty much every first and second down because, why? They're facing a rookie quarterback. So you challenge him to beat you deep, especially when you have cover corners like the Giants have doing the type of job they did outside against Dallas, Jenkins, DRC, throw Eli Apple into the mix. You can put 8 guys into the box and do it. Do I think you're going to see 8 guys in the box on first and down against the Saints? on this Sunday? I say probably not.
No.
Because you're worried about Drew Brees or do.
He's not going to shy away.
And I promise you the Giants' game plan on defense would have been very different if Tony Romo was quarterbacking the Cowboys. It's just the way it goes.
It goes based on situation, as you noted. And mm-hmm. Drew Brees is the type of quarterback that also is going to take some chances deep as opposed to Dak Prescott. If he sees the coverage heavy, he's going to be, you know what, I'll go down to Beasley and win it underneath. I'm not going to try to test it.
And you were, that was a good call on Witten for your fantasy player of the day.
I
and by the way,
he was going to be dumping
I did
him
well
off.
With Sterling Shepard, too. He got a
touchdown. You did, correct. But Witten had more points, though. So.
No, they're about the same.
PPR. Witten had more points.
No, I think they're about the same.
I added it up.
How is that possible?
Because Shepard didn't have a lot of receptions.
Shepard had three or four catches.
Yeah, but he only had about, what, 40 yards or 30 yards?
Yeah, so you have 6 points for the touchdown. Let's say he had three catches. That's 9 points.
So that's 13 and change.
Yeah, 13 and change.
So Witten had 9 catches for 66 yards.
Oh, I thought he had 6 for 66.
No, he had 9. Yeah.
Oh, you're right.
See?
Good point.
All right. You know, basic mathematics here.
And now what we're going to do, by the way, because on our radio show we're picking a fantasy player of the game. What we'll do during the year, we'll add up those points throughout the year. Then whoever has the most points at the end of the year is going to win. So
the only thing I'm wondering, though.
What's that?
To just look back, for example, one guy picked a quarterback. I think it was Paul.
Yeah, because he got to pick
first. So the question is, though, because quarterbacks are more than likely to put up a lot more points than the other positions,
here's what I think
guess
we
is
do.
My point.
I think we have quarterback points, touchdowns count for only 4 instead of 6.
Okay, maybe that's a way that we look at it.
And I think that'll even out the scoring a little bit.
All right, I'll
that
make
way,
that adjustment.
Think of it this
that's
way.
Fair.
Eli threw 3 touchdowns. That's 12 points. He gets -2 for the interception. That's
correct.
Down to 10.
And then he had 8,
he threw for
eight
about,
and change for the 200 yards that he threw.
Right, and that'll put him at 18. So I think that kind of puts him in
that's
line
fair.
With the other guys.
So maybe we'll take down the touchdown totals. Okay.
You're down with that?
Yeah, I'm down with that. Absolutely. We don't need to run it by them because it doesn't matter. We decide.
Absolutely so. Not. 201-939. Folks, that, you just witnessed a little bit of a Giants radio production meeting
yes,
right
that's
there.
How the
I hope you enjoyed it. 201-939-4513. Jeff from Rhode Island. Jeff, you're coming in next. How are you, pal? Jeff, how
good
are you?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hey,
how
Jeff.
You doing today?
Doing
that
well.
Was a very pleasing win Saturday, to be
absolutely.
Sure. It certainly made up for last year. So I'm very happy with that.
Yes, sir.
I tried to get through yesterday. I wanted to ask this question of Kyle Banks, hoping that he could explain it to me. Watching the course of the game and over many years, it seems as if Witten on every play is given a free release, off the line of scrimmage. Nobody ever puts a hand on him, you know, to try and get him to change his direction or whatever. He's always off the line of scrimmage untouched. And I was wondering, why is that? Why aren't we adjusting to that, or why aren't we, you know, doing something about that to change that up?
You know, Jeff, I think that's an excellent question. I do not have a great answer for you. I think it would probably have to be depending on the individual play, the formation, the personnel, and things like that. But overall, general scope. I don't know. And what I'll do, Carl Banks will be here tomorrow, Jeff.
Oh,
do me
okay.
a favor. I will see if I can pull him aside. Lance will try to remind me. I'll try to pull Carl aside. I'll try to get that answer for you, all right?
That'd be great. I didn't know if it was because they were playing zone or, you know, playing man.
That might be part of it, too.
What exactly the issue was. But it always seems, I mean, over the years, this guy kills us, and I'm always wondering why he's running free.
Well, Jeff, I think you actually brought up a good point, and I was going to bring up, I think a lot of it has to do with man-to-man versus zone, and when you look at the corners are mostly going to take the three guys that the Cowboys line up more often than not, which is Dez, Cole Beasley, as well as Terrence Williams, then you're probably going to have a linebacker maybe mirroring one of the running backs who's in the backfield, so it's about whether or not you're willing to bring one of your linebackers or your safety so close to the line to touch up with Witten, and
there's
then all of a
there.
Sudden you leave risk in the backside. And I'll bring
fair.
Up an example. If you remember the game-winning touchdown from week one last year, Jason Witten does actually go freely off the line. But what it was is it was the job of Devon Kennard to at least misdirect him and then make his route uncomfortable so that by the time he did get the cross, he wouldn't be freely at the front of the end zone. So the issue was nobody at least disrupted his route running. It's not so much disrupting him, I think, at the line of scrimmage, Jeff. It's more of just maybe getting his way a little bit so that he doesn't have a clear path to run his route.
Well, inside those 5 yards.
Correct,
just,
of course.
You know, give him some type of contact.
Some type of misdirection or some type of contact.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's exactly what I want to find out. And Lance, if you can take care of that for me, I would very much appreciate that.
Absolutely.
I can do it too.
Yeah.
No problem.
Okay, I'll be sure to listen tomorrow. Thank you.
All right, thank
Hi, Jeff.
You, Jeff.
Appreciate
Jeff.
The phone call.
201. Well, I'm not back until Friday, so I might have to wait until then to get him his information. But hopefully, I'll remember.
We'll find a way to communicate with Jeff in Rhode Island. Yes.
Maybe I could text Carl.
No, it's a good question. I agree. because
I know Howard Cross always complains about that during the game too. So he doesn't know why they give him free releases either.
But I think a lot of it does have to do with whatever the coverage is, and you know how many personnel you're willing to bring up to the line to expose on the back end.
Yeah, fair point. Let's go to Steve up in West Point. Steve, what's going on? How are you today?
Gentlemen, let me tell you how excited I am that we're not sitting around talking about the offensive line and what it could be. Or something. I'm so happy.
Steve,
it's the regular season.
You're excited?
We have fresh information.
How do you think I feel that we're not talking about the offensive line? I couldn't be happier.
I'm so I'm impressed with you guys over the winter when there's nothing to talk about and you guys just repeat the same drum over and over again, but you guys do it so professionally.
Thank you. We try,
always
Steve.
Amazed.
We appreciate it.
So I just wanted to say our defense, yes, during the game against Dallas, it was a pleasure to watch. All right, it wasn't perfect, but it's been so long since I've sat and watched the Giants game that it wasn't disaster after disaster after disaster on defense, and you just get sick and tired of watching it. And they actually played decent football. Our linebackers were all over the place. Our safeties were like missiles out there. And let me tell you something. Olivier Vernon, he just displayed, you cannot put him against your tight end. He'll eat your tight end up.
Yes, he will.
You cannot block Olivier Vernon with the tight end.
I'll tell you what, even offensive linemen are going to have trouble blocking Olivier Vernon. I know, you know me, I'm always cautious with guys. I try to, you know, pump the brakes on people making too big a deal about him. But I saw it in the summer, guys. Olivier Vernon is a hell of a player. He's a difference maker, and I think you saw that in week one against the Cowboys, even though, again, and this is why, Steve, the sack number can be so misleading. He had zero sacks. I don't even think he had a quarterback hit in the game. I think he had a couple hurries, and that's it. But you know what? Olivier Vernon dominated that game yesterday, even though the stats don't show it.
Totally. And you know who else had a hell of a game? Two people that – one is a shock, and the other one we all know is good. It's actually Marshall Newhouse had a heck of a game last against Dallas, and Weston Richburg, I saw a block that he put on the defensive tackle. He had him buckling at his knees and then literally like slammed him to the ground.
Well, Steven, there was a play also during the Giants' 4-minute offense drive in the fourth quarter where John Jerry made a fantastic block pulling to the left,
and he
was one on one with the Cowboys linebacker, cleared the way right out, and Rashad Jennings ran for the first down. So a lot of players that Giant fans have been calling up and killing this offseason, and Pro Football Focus, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, had Marshall Newhouse as their highest graded tackle after week number one. And I can't wait to hear from Charlie and Paul Amin about that in a couple minutes, because he's on line three.
Well, I understand that we're going up against a depleted, and I know what he's going to say. It was a depleted defensive line
and that's
from
true.
Dallas, and I totally get that, but you can't. You can't do but what's in front of you. You know, you can't fight somebody who's on the bench. So they put out what was on the field, and we did the best we could against that, and we dominated, in my opinion, on a lot of different areas. There was a lot of sloppiness. Yeah, we could have gotten off the field on third down a little bit better. There were some times where the play calling seemed like a little iffy. But other than that, by the way, I'm happy to see Ben McAdoo calling the plays. Not that I had a problem with Sully, but
I
just feel comfortable.
I was going to say.
He was calling the play.
Well, no, here's the thing, Steve. We don't know that. Both guys had play sheets.
Interesting. I didn't see that. I only saw him with the play sheets.
So I was like,
this is great. He's calling plays. But
you know, it's funny, Steve. Steve, it's funny, and we'll let you finish. But I saw McAdoo with the play sheet in the first quarter, and I got my binoculars out in the booth, and I'm looking. I'm trying to see what's going on, and I'm looking. I'm seeing, and I see Sully on the bench, and I'm like, he doesn't have a play sheet. Does that mean McAdoo's calling the plays? And then he was kneeling down talking to the quarterbacks. Then Sullivan stood up, picked his play sheet up off the ground, and walked back over there. So both guys had play sheets. I don't know who the hell was calling plays. I got to be honest with you.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of back and forth
throughout
the game,
Sully.
Too.
Maybe that's what's going on. But before I get off, I had a question. I'm getting older, so my memory's not really all that good anymore. But I could have sworn that the Giants beat Dallas on opening day when they opened up their stadium when we went down and got the first win out of Dallas Stadium, and Eli, like, signed something on the wall. There's a whole bunch of drama about that.
That was the opening day? That was the Cowboys' home opener that year, but it was not week one. I believe that was week two, Lance. Go to 2011, I believe, I want to say, if I'm not mistaken. Was that when the Cowboys Stadium opened, 2011?
No.
And the Giants that year.
Well, 2011.
Nope, that's not it. All right, try 2010. Might be 2010. If it's not 2010,
yeah, I don't feel it was 2010. If anything, maybe 2012. The stadium opened.
We were 0-8 against them on opening day. So,
well, they were 0-7.
My memory's wrong, but I'm like, man, I could have sworn we beat them on opening day.
Yeah, there we go.
In their own house.
Yeah, here we go.
That was here at MetLife Stadium.
That's here at MetLife Stadium. So wait, so when did?
Well, no, I know for a fact that fact is correct, though. They were definitely 0-7 against.
Yeah.
The Cowboys.
Let's see real simple. What year did Cowboys Stadium open? Do we know that?
Well, let's try to find out what year AT&T – well, not AT&T because it wasn't originally
right.
AT&T.
That's why I said Cowboys.
So,
all right, Steve, thanks for the call. I'm going to look this up for you, all right?
You're welcome. Yep.
Thank you, pal. Appreciate it. 2009. So go to the 2009 season. That's the one we did not check.
It was week two.
Yeah, the Cowboys opened up in Tampa in 2009. Then they played their home opener against the Giants – but not the opener week of the year.
Correct.
And it was 33-31 they lost to the Giants. By the way, the reason, and this is interesting little nugget that only broadcasters care about. I'm sure you heard this week that in opening days, the Giants are 0-7 against the Cowboys. But everyone kept saying the Cowboys in their opening days are 8-0 against the Giants.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, you ask why. Well, back in 1967 or 69.
I think it was 66.
It was 66,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. When the Cowboys played the Giants, it was the Cowboys' opener. But it wasn't the Giants' opener because back then there were only 15 NFL teams, so one team had a bye week the first week of the year. So it happened to be the Cowboys. So that's why those two numbers were unbalanced, and that's what broadcasters have to do, searching through 18,000 media notes to get ready for the game to try to get those facts and figures
straight.
Because
everybody was throwing out 8-0, and I was telling people that's where you get in that stat. Then I later found out the discrepancy, and I was always going with – the 0-7 number, and that's what we got also from the NFL research notes as well.
Which is correct from the Giants' perspective.
Of course.
From the Cowboys' perspective, it was 8 because that was their opener.
Yeah.
Silly stuff, but it's the minutia.
That's the history of the National Football League. The one other thing that I wanted to throw out with respect to what Steve was talking about, you know, we were talking about how the offensive line were judged and graded.
Yeah.
That's why I always say, let me see 4 games every NFL season. Let me see the first quarter of the year before I jump to conclusions about, okay, this is an issue on the team, this is a strength of the team. And I'm even being cautious, even in the wake of the Giants' positives in week one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's see 3 more games before we jump to conclusions about what the strengths, weaknesses, and needs for this team are.
I will tell you this, though. The only thing I'm pretty sure about, and I say it with confidence, I don't think I need any more confirmation that the Giants' run defense is going to be good.
That's
this
fair.
Year. That's the one thing that I'm pretty damn positive about. Because what better test do you have than the Cowboys?
Of course. And the personnel that they have, too, came with pretty strong resumes
as
well. So it wasn't as if we were throwing these guys into circumstances that we've never seen before.
Correct. So I agree with your statement 100%. Remember, last year, first week of the year, do you know what happened when the 49ers played the Minnesota Vikings? The 49ers demolished them. They beat them like 42-17.
I remember that game.
And then look at the Niners' record and look at the Vikings' record at the end of the year.
Well, and here's another example. How about the Atlanta Falcons last year? They start off 6-0 only to then go on a skid and miss the playoffs. So that's why you have to put things in perspective. There's a lot of positives, and I'm sure Giants fans are ultra excited over the win, and you should be.
And they should be.
But there's a long season to go, and we need a bigger sample size before we start making these bold declarations and so forth.
And the same with the negatives. I mean, that's the point. You know, it's one game. Strange things happen in week one. It's the reason it's week one of the NFL season, and you'll figure things out as we go along. Joel, he's been holding the longest. He's up next. By the way, folks, in the next 20 minutes, we have some open lines if you want to try to sneak in. Joel, you're in Plainfield. How are you?
Good, good. How you doing, guys?
Doing well, Joel.
Good to speak to you guys after a Giants win.
Yes.
And jumping off right what you said about, you know, getting the expectations, you know, waiting for the next 4 games to really put in a perspective of how this team is looking. But it did look like they answered, or for this one game, they answered a lot of those questions that we had already for the offseason.
Positive answers for sure.
Their run defense looked good. It was looking for those 3 wide receivers to show up, and they did, you know, especially being the fact that you had Cruz come back, you had Sterling Shepard, both of those guys getting touchdowns. And, you know, they barely even moved Odell around. So that's hopefully going to set us up for the future. So making other teams really look at those other two receivers and hopefully letting Odell get more open.
Honestly, Joel, I thought they moved Odell around enough, but I think what the Cowboys did, quite frankly, was the same type of thing the Giants did. They gave help over the other team's best wide receiver, and why wouldn't you? You make the other guys on the field beat you, and the Giants are good enough now with Cruz and Shepard being there, where if you're going to put two guys on Odell Beckham Jr., you make them pay. Now the Giants found one of those times the Cowboys didn't, and they had a man-on-man with Scandrick. They beat him down the field. But for the most part, you know, that's how you have to deal with it. Very rarely are other teams just going to man up your best wide receiver and say, yeah, whatever, we'll deal with the results. They're going to put help over there. And Shepard and Cruz and Danelle and, you know, Vereen and all those other guys got to make the team pay for doing it.
Yeah. And you know what? You're right. But what one of the other things I did notice, too, is obviously we're talking about, you know, that four-minute offense. They did show that the – at least for going against this particular defense, we don't know how good or, you know, that the Dallas Cowboy defense line is without those their two bookends. But they at least ran on them. They showed us some positive steps, so hopefully setting us up for the future. So they're moving, at least moving in the right direction.
Well, and nobody's denying that, Joel. I guess my point is that there's going to be a variety of different defenses that they're going to see in the next coming week. So when you have a sample size against defenses that ranked at the bottom of the league, the middle of the league, top of the league, I think you just get a better feel for how the team responds.
Right, Joel. And Joel, in the same way, you know, the Giants didn't register a sack yesterday. I don't think that means that the Giants are going to be a terrible pass-rushing team.
Yeah.
They happen to be playing one of the best offensive lines in
football.
So
when they don't go up against the best offensive line, let's see perhaps what that results.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Understood. I mean, like you said, you know, you're going against the best offensive line. But they did make some. They did make them hurry up a couple times when they brought the extra.
Absolutely.
When they brought Camardi come in. You know, they did do that.
And
the only thing that really made me feel nervous was middle linebacker Shepard. He really didn't seem to do too much. Casillas really showed up everywhere, but it seemed like you know, Shepard was getting kind of pushed around in the middle there.
Honestly, I did not watch Shepard a ton during the game. I did not watch him on tape a whole lot. You're right, he was quiet. I didn't hear his name get mentioned a whole lot. But I did not watch him specifically, Joel, so I can't necessarily say he played poorly because I didn't really look for that.
Well, and here's the other thing. Remember, Shepard's not a three-down linebacker.
That's true, too.
So, you know, if you expect Shepard to be out on Jason Witten, I don't really think you're going to see that a lot.
Though, in fairness, I bet you the Giants were in their base defense probably as much or more than they were in any game last year.
Well, of course, because the goal was to stop the run.
Right.
But I think that when you look at the more versatile linebackers maybe to make plays, I think you're thinking more like the Kennards and the Keenan Robinsons as opposed to maybe the Kelvin Shepherds.
I'll tell you what, Kennard was off the field a lot. He only played like 25 snaps.
Well, I think, you know, part of that has to do with, I think, Spags also trying to get a feel for his linebacking personnel and see who has strengths that he wants to put in those positions. So, you know, often week one and week two are very much experimentational, where you just want to see, okay, this is my group. What position do I want to throw this guy in? What position do I not want to throw this guy in? And remember, you have a number of new linebackers on the team this year.
Well, definitely take a look at it, you know, Shepard, you know, when you go back and look at the game. I mean, and hopefully come back with an answer for me, because I really want to see and get you guys' feedback on what do you think of his performance. And, you know, obviously I'm looking for more from him next week.
Will do. Appreciate the call, my friend.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
All right, by my count, it looks like, and let me double check exactly how many offensive plays the Cowboys ran, because I know Prescott was on the field for all of them, obviously. So
I
the
think
Cowboys
it was 78,
ran 78.
Right? Yeah.
Offensive plays. I just wanted to double check that. So, defensively for the Giants, just as some snap count numbers. The only Giant defender to play every defensive snap
was Jenkins,
take a guess.
Right? Janoris Jenkins. Well, I read that. So.
Oh, you're all over
well,
it.
Well, I
job,
mean,
Beto.
Listen, I
74 for Vernon, 76 for JPP, 77 for Cromartie. Those are the only players on the defense that played more than 60 snaps. Hankins was on the field for 52. Snacks Harrison was on the off the field too. He played 50. Odighizuwa off the bench played just 18 as part of that rotation. A linebacker.
Yeah, what was the breakdown there?
Casillas 59, Shepard 58. Believe it or not, they almost had the exact same amount of snaps.
And then what about the rest of the clan?
As I mentioned, Kennard just 26. Let's see. JT Thomas did not play a defensive snap in
on
the first half
teams.
Until his injury. 30 for Keenan Robinson. And those are the only four linebackers that played snaps for the Giants. 17 for Leon Hall. Eli Apple played 57 as the nickel. And that shows you they had about 21 base defense snaps, which you probably don't have that many in a regular game. Nat Burhe played 35 snaps at safety, and Darian Thompson played 43 snaps at safety.
And Burhe was coming up near the line in the pile a lot. I mean, I saw him more often than not when they would go to the run, the Cowboys. Burhe came in almost like a linebacker for help.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think he really sent a message to Ezekiel Elliott on Elliott's first run of the game. I think he might get a letter from the league this week about it.
Well.
But I think he did send a message on that first thing where Elliott kind of got held up. He almost tried to leap over the defensive line and, like a missile.
There you go.
Reason he's got the
Living
nickname.
Living up to his name.
And he kind of, you know, got Elliott in the cranium area.
Well, and I'm looking at the statistics. Casillas, he was the leading tackler. So that would make sense with the near 60 snaps. Kelvin Shepard had two total tackles. You had Kennard with three,
but a big one
solo.
The big one by Casillas was on the Ezekiel Elliott catch in the
Huge
red zone.
In the red zone,
and
yeah.
By the way, give Eli Apple credit there, too, because if he's not there sealing that outside edge, he did not allow Elliott to turn up field as soon as he caught the ball. He made him kind of belly back and try to get around the edge.
To give
and
Casillas
that allowed Casillas a chance to go get him. 201-939-4513. Hopefully a very happy Charlie in Portland, Maine, joins us next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Charlie,
I don't know if those
good
two
afternoon.
Terms are synonymous.
How
though.
Are you today?
This is interesting. Charlie is a man of no words, which we're not complaining
well,
about.
Well, no, I think Charlie was trying to bring some production there. I hope he didn't lose him there, Dave. No, I think that was on purpose. I think Charlie was trying to play a music and song for us.
He's trying to get too clever. It's just not going to work.
Oh, Charlie is there.
Yeah,
go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, of course, and he's chuckling. No surprise.
What was that, Charlie? I couldn't hear it.
I was just putting some production. It's the
what
curse
was it? I couldn't
is
hear
broken.
It.
It said the curse is broken.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Very good.
Yes.
Hey, I'm just totally ecstatic. You know, I don't care. We won by 1 point. It doesn't matter. The curse is broken. Can you imagine today if Williams got out of bounds, and they kicked a 63-yard field goal with no time left on the clock, how we would be feeling today?
No, I couldn't. In fact, I'm thrilled that it didn't happen because I would be miserable. And I'd be like, I'd be like this.
We'd all be on a suicide watch. So I am totally ecstatic that we won the game. And I thought our defense is going to be really good. I mean, they were on the field a lot.
Yep.
And our rotation was good because we had to have some guys come in because they were on the field so much. So, I mean, I got to say our defense is going to be stout this year. And just about Shepard, I didn't like us cutting Brinkley in the first place, and Shepard had two assistant tackles. That was it. I would love to bring Brinkley back. He's a force on the first and second down.
Yeah, but Charlie, think of it this way, though. You're right. He's a force on first and second down against the run, but the Giants' run defense was spectacular.
Yeah, I know, and he would make it even better. I mean, Shep was not on there for three downs either. He was out.
No, not all the time. Kelvin Shepard played 58 snaps, so he was definitely out there in passing situations.
Well, I didn't like him. I didn't just think he played that well.
Okay,
but
fair
enough. I hope they bring Brinkley back. They do have room. But the other thing is we needed to do two things from last year that we didn't do, and we actually did it in this game, and that was the red zone.
Yep.
Score, touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
We were 3-for-3, and we didn't even have the ball hardly at all. So that was an incredible improvement from last year.
Good point.
And run the ball. And we ran the ball. And the thing is, the schemes that they're using for blocking, I don't know if that's Solari's input or not, but moving Jerry and, you know, pulling and all that, instead of just running straight ahead up the middle like we did last year, I think that made a big difference. And so I have to, you know, I hope that was Solari who put that in and utilized the strength of his players. But, well, let me just say this. Don't get cocky about our O-line. Our tackles, we went up against their second string, maybe third string guys. When we go up against, you know, the best DNs in the NFL, then if they can do that, then we can talk about our O-line being, you know, they've stepped up. But until then, we still have weaknesses on our tackles. But I am just happy that we won and the curse is over. We won our first game. It's going to change the whole trajectory of this season just by winning that first game. Now New Orleans is coming in. It's probably going to be a shootout. But I think because it's in New York, we should get our second win. So, no, I'm ecstatic. I'm just so glad we won that game. If we had lost that game in the last seconds again, man, I don't know. It would have been horrible. So I'll take anything. 1 point, that is fine. So that the curse is over. So
thank you, Charlie.
Good. All right, guys.
Appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's funny.
Yeah.
And a win is a win is a win. That's really the bottom line here. It doesn't matter how you win or how you lose. You are what your record says you are, right? That's what Bill Parcells used to say. And it's funny, he talked about, you know, getting cocky and expectations and things like that. I ran into a few Giant fans that were at the team hotel in downtown Dallas, and they came up to me. They're like, oh, what do you think is going to happen today? And I predicted, I said, I thought the Giants would win 27-24. And I probably, there was one very nice family that was there traveling with his dad, and I believe it was his son. And I had a nice conversation with them. I don't think they shared me what their name was, but they were very nice. They said, listen to the show. And they're like, duh, no way. 31-3, rookie quarterback. And I said, guys, just go back the last 5, 6, 7, 8 years and look at these Giants-Cowboys games. It doesn't matter who the coaches are. Doesn't matter who the players are. Doesn't matter who's injured. Doesn't matter who's healthy. The games are always close, and they're always pretty crazy. And I think that kind of held firm for this first game.
Well, and Prescott played a good game, all things considered. I mean, that's a solid performance from a guy that...
What was his final stat line?
It was 25. He threw the ball 45 times, though.
Which is more than I'm sure they would have liked.
Of course, and the fact that he didn't turn the ball over once in those 45 times.
That's a pretty...
No, I'm not, but you know what? I'm not going so much by these ratings and these mathematical equations. I'm talking about the eye test. If I put a rookie out there against a vastly improved defense and I didn't have any running game to really support me throughout the contest, I think it was a solid performance for a rookie thrown into that situation.
And I will play a little bit of a counterbalance there, and here's what I'll say. He got to play against 8 men in the box the whole game, okay? He didn't make one big play down the field the whole game. I felt like the Cowboys really protected him in what they asked him to do. A lot of dinking and dunking, a lot of play action. They didn't like have him go 7-step drop and read both sides of the field and, you know, throw 20 yards.
But that may have been a big part of the
like
game
that.
Plan, though, I'm sure, too.
Maybe it wasn't.
They may have not gone in and said, hey, we don't want you to air it out.
Well, that's my point, though. I think they protected him because he's still a rookie.
Oh, absolutely.
For what they asked him to do, I think he did okay. Carson Wentz, much better rookie start for him.
Well,
he made some NFL throws in that game.
Well, and remember, I think it's a different story when you're the Eagles and you have a comfortable lead in that game. You're going to allow your rookie to spread his wings a little bit more. Prescott, when he doesn't have a lead, I think you're going to be like, hey, let's keep this game close and let's try to keep it close to the vest. So that's why I said, based on what I think their game plan was, I think that he carried that out. Of course, small sample size in their games where maybe they do want him to branch out. For all we know, he throws 4 interceptions and it changes the narrative. But I think all things considered, it was certainly a strong performance.
All right, we got 8 minutes. We got 2 callers. Let's get them both in. Marco in Connecticut, he's been holding the longest. Marco, thanks for joining us.
Hey, John and Lance, how are you today?
How are you, Marco?
Doing well.
I'm doing great. Pumped up. So happy we were able to get this win.
Absolutely.
Start the year off right.
Mm-hmm.
A couple takeaways, and then I'll ask you a question, and I can hop off to and listen off air.
Sure.
I came away super impressed with Darian Thompson in the limited time he played, or the limited just role that he had because of the shoulder injury. But I'm real excited about the three of them, Burhe and Collins, and I want to put Burhe in there. I love the big hits, and I know you said he might get fined for one of them, but I think he could carve out a nice niche here, and he could have a good role on this team. I think Spagnuolo's got some real good chips that he can use with those safeties. But Thompson especially, I mean, so impressed with what he was able to do tackling. He came down to the backfield a few times, and was just so clean on his tackling. It was really, really good to watch. And then the two questions. One question is, Devin Kennard, you said that he played about 25 snaps.
Yes.
I'm curious about him. And he was such, I thought, like an up-and-coming player for us. I know he got hurt last year, but he was I went maybe the whole game the other night without even thinking about him.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Marco, real quick, and I can answer your Kennard question very quickly. They do not see him as a coverage guy. They see him as a line of scrimmage guy that can go downhill. So he's either going to be in there to stop the run or he's going to be in there to rush the passer. And that's not a guy that we're going to see them put in coverage an awful lot. So that very simply is my answer to you on Kennard.
That's fair. And then here's my question. I think the Cowboys play the Redskins next week. Am I
they
correct
do.
On
you
that?
You are correct.
And
yes.
Then I thought it was the 49ers. They played the 49ers the week
yeah,
after
no,
that. Yeah,
Dallas definitely plays Washington.
Okay.
Because that's what all the Redskins were talking about after the loss.
Okay, there
you
go.
So Dallas now, they have back-to-back, counting our game, they have back-to-back division games. And then Washington will play Dallas, and then they play us. What, from a Giants point of view, Giants fan point of view, who are you rooting for in that game? And I don't think it's too early to be scoreboard watching when it comes to the
NFL. I think you root for Washington, and you try to knock Dallas out early
Dallas
in
off.
The season.
Yeah, me too.
That's what I would do if I was a Giants fan.
Well, but on the flip side, if Dallas beats Washington and then you beat Washington, they're 0-3 to start the season, and they've lost two divisional games.
Thanks
so,
for going, Marco.
I mean, I don't know necessarily if you have to root for anybody. I think you want them to beat up each other. I get that.
Correct.
But remember, you know, I still shy away from we've seen teams struggle early and then get hot, and Washington's one of those teams that pulled that off last season, and then we've seen teams that get hot early and then all of a sudden fade away late in the season. So at this point, I think, you know, let's see how the cards play out before we're talking about eliminating a team after 2 or 3 weeks of the season.
I'm not saying two losses eliminates a team, but you do put them in an 0-2 NFC East hole, which is tough to get out of.
Absolutely, and that's why Washington or Dallas, unless there's a tie, somebody's going in an 0-2 hole.
Well,
I mean, 0-2
record-wise,
but
yes.
But, you know, hey, listen, losses outside of the division two count as well, because, you know, then you create a hole that you maybe can't dig yourselves out of.
Before we go to John Allentown to wrap up the show here, Lance, two other things I want to bring out that I thought the Giants caught a break on. One, very fortunate on that Cruz game-winning touchdown that they didn't get called for the coordinated celebration penalty.
Yes.
Beckham kind of swooping in with the camera thing. So I think almost the officials realize, like, this is a pretty big moment for Cruz. 2 years, score the touchdown, roll the dice, that's fine. The other play that somebody pointed out to me that I watched on tape yesterday, Larry Donnell cleared out some players on that Victor Cruz game when he touched out, too.
He did? I didn't see.
There, if, depending on how you look at it, he kind of tackled Byron Jones out of the way. It could have been an offensive pass interference. It wasn't blatant. But if they would have thrown the flag, I don't think people would have been like, I could see that.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Football and breaks, it's a big theme.
All right, John, again, teams get breaks the other way too, and the Cowboys got plenty of breaks in that game. We're not taking anything away from the win, but it just shows you the difference, the small differences that you get between wins and losses over the course of these games.
We talked about this earlier. If Beasley doesn't drop that catch, that's probably a touchdown for Dallas on their first possession.
What?
And
you make
who
your
knows
own
how that changes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, breaks are going to happen. The ball's going to bounce away. It's a matter of good teams, I always say, overcoming issues.
Absolutely.
That's what separates them from the rest of the pack.
John in Allentown will wrap us up today. Johnny, how are you, pal?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Hey, man.
How are you?
I got through. I've been listening to y'all for quite some time, and definitely love hearing y'all.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in.
I just wanted to touch on the two things that you just spoke about and then the one thing that I was calling about.
Yes, sir.
First thing is I'm rooting for Dallas and now Dallas against Washington game because Washington seems more poised. They seem, you know, they seem to have more talent on their team than, you know, Dallas at this point.
That's fair. So you know what? I will say this, though, John. I will say this, John, real quick. I didn't think Kirk Cousins played well last night at all. I thought he did not look like the same guy he was last year.
Well, the offensive line was one penalty after another. That's I think true. The That's offense overall did not perform very well, quarterback included.
Go ahead, John.
I'll agree, but I'm just saying that Washington has more talent on their team than what you're looking at it with the Dallas Cowboys. So
yeah, I'll buy that.
I would say that they're more threatening. So any losses on Washington at this point, being that they're more powerful to me, you know, matter of opinion.
Well, but John,
in Dallas,
I'll buy that.
John, let me throw one other thing out, and then we'll let you continue because I know you wanted to get to other points. You could look at it from this perspective, though. If Tony Romo is going to come back, and based on the reports, he's going to come back maybe around week 7, do you want to perhaps put Dallas in a very deep hole early that even though Romo comes back, it's going to be so significant that they're not going to be able to overcome it? You can maybe think from that perspective, too, because I'm telling you, Romo's coming back this season. I think there's a very good chance he is based on the reports and the fact that he's going to be traveling with the team.
We'll see how good he is, though, when he gets
back. No, of course, but what I'm saying is that does change the dynamics of that team with Romo as opposed to a rookie quarterback. So if Dallas loses a number of games early.
We all know Romo can't play well towards the end of the year.
Well, I mean, listen, you can throw out all those narratives you want, but all I'm saying is that when the experienced quarterback comes back, I think that does change the conversation a tad.
All right, John, finish up. What do you got?
So, other than that, yes, there was a pick on that last play. Donnell did, you know, have a little pick, but then he kind of leaned off of him. So he really, they already had contact when he was crossing the middle anyway. So, you know, it's kind of iffy with that call. But the thing that I wanted to touch on is good job for the offensive line. I mean, I know Dallas has a depleted defensive line, but to see John Jerry pulling and blasting people out of the hole and making room for the run. To watch, you know, the way that offensive line was able to move, to see Vereen, you know, get off the big runs, get off the big runs. I mean, that was impressive. Even though, like I said, Dallas line is depleted, the Giants line have something to build their confidence off of now. And that makes me a little bit better and more optimistic about the year going forward. Because, obviously, you got to look at this offensive line. I figured finishing in the top 10, I think, if not 6, as far as the offensive in total last season. So, you know, everybody was talking about, oh, preseason, the offensive line can't do this and they can't do that. I honestly think that Ben McAdoo made them play the way they played. Because you honestly see, you didn't see Eli coming up or playing, you know, giving any audibles, changing, you know, the plays at the line of scrimmage or anything. If they ran to the right and the blitz was coming from the right, they kept running to the right in preseason. So,
John, on the final two drives for the Giants, their game-winning drive and their four-minute offense, Eli Manning changed the play almost 4 or 5 times in a row on those drives.
Well, I think he was talking about the preseason, though.
Oh, preseason. I got you. My bad, John. I'm sorry.
Everybody's going wild over the offensive line.
Well, that's because it's vanilla in the preseason, and that's what we were talking about. They're not going to be that creative. They just want to see how these guys react to situations where you don't game plan and so forth.
Thanks, John. Exactly. We got to run, pal.
All right, guys. I like talking to y'all. Have a good one. Appreciate it. Go Giants.
Hey, all right, John.
Don't be a stranger, my friend. Thanks so much. Two guys I want to shout out before we say goodbye. Janoris Jenkins, excellent game on Dez. We haven't mentioned his name yet. And JPP had a couple great inside pass rush moves on Doug Free to get hits on Dak Prescott. In fact, he almost forced a fumble. I don't know how Prescott held on to that ball when JPP kind of hit his arm from behind. I don't know how he held on to that football. But it was a great play by Jason, and it was good to see him getting around the quarterback.
Well, and I also throw out DRC, too. He was on Dez, especially with one target in the end zone, where
knocked
he played
it
very well.
And Landon Collins knocked the ball away from
Correct.
Dez, too.
Correct. Landon made a nice play. And also DRC with perhaps, I mean, we could read into this all we want, but the positioning he had on Terrence Williams to maybe think about going back inside. So that's
point
another
too.
Play that certainly stands out.
Very good point as well. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us tomorrow. Marks and Deal right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. For the Skylands Meadow, I am John Schmelk. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time on Giants.com, everybody. Have a pleasant day.